fans, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Now, we have every state in the United States has two senators, except for one. Illinois has three. And the third one, as we go to Chicago, is Senator Billy Lawless. And Billy is the first expatriate to serve in the Irish Senate. And he's a spokesperson for the Irish abroad. He was appointed by the Taoiseach, Prime Minister of Ireland, Enda Kenny, in May to represent the Irish diaspora. Senator Lawless is a prominent lobbyist for immigration reform in the United States, co-founder of the Irish immigration reform movement, co-founder of Voting Rights, that's votingrights.ie, immigration reform in the U.S., of course, and he is a native of Galway City. Let me, as we head to Chicago, let me welcome Senator Billy Lawless. How are you there, Senator?
Good morning, Adrian. I'm very well, thank you.
You know, it was, and it is, you know, an amazing distinction to have, you know, first of all, an Irish senator in the United States. But of all the people who indeed had aspirations since over the many years when Americans and Irish Americans and Native Irish had besieged and reminded the Irish government that there should be an Irish senator representing the diaspora. And so first of all, congratulations. You're it, first person ever to be a member of the Irish Senate. And Billy, again, congratulations.
Thank you very much, Adrian. Thank you.
You know, no stranger to politics on the Irish side. I think one of the you know, the surprises is that you decided quite late in your 40s to actually immigrate with your family from Galway City to the U.S. and to Chicago. What brought that about, Billy?
Well, from a young man, Adrian, I always had a thing about the United States. I don't think there's a family in Ireland, really, that hasn't a relation in the United States. It always held in that allure for me as a young man. And then I got married and started my businesses, and I suppose had a family, so that kind of went out the window. But in 1987, my youngest daughter got a rowing scholarship to University of Massachusetts and then to BU. And I think that was the spur that said to me, come on, look, if I don't do it now, I'll never do it. So when Amy went to Boston, actually I was going to, it was Boston that I was actually going to start up our business. And I came down to Chicago one weekend to visit a cousin out in the suburbs. I went downtown Chicago and I said, this is where I'm going to open my restaurants. So that's really how it came about. Well, yeah. I was 47 years of age, so it was relatively, of course it was late in life coming out to the United States.
Right. You know, many who have come from Ireland, including myself, you know, came to the United States because we had to go somewhere.
Absolutely.
There really wasn't, and many would say still isn't, opportunity in Ireland for all of those regardless of their level of education. Ireland is just, despite the Celtic Tiger and the collapse of the Celtic Tiger, and now hopefully the rise from the dust again. Ireland, by most reckoning, simply cannot accommodate those who would like to grow up and to live in Ireland. Do you agree with that?
I do, actually, Adrian. And I was just reading some reports earlier today, just before, to prepare myself to talk to you. And even just last year, up to April 16, 31,800 Irish have left, although 21,000 have moved back. So it's the number immigrating is going down, and there are more people coming back. In actual fact, we had an inward migration has overtaken net outward migration of all nationalities. We had about, 79,000 of all nationalities immigrated into Ireland last year. But it's still 31,000 is still too high, Adrian. There's no doubt about it.
It definitely is. And also, that is good news, and that speaks well for Ireland. It does little, though, for those who are here in the United States and for those who now have made their home in the United States and who must be disgusted if they pick up a newspaper or listen to radio or watch television or go on the Internet to see the vicious harassment of immigrants and the the Constitution of the United States, the Statue of Liberty, come all ye poor, come all. Nobody there to date is no good news there, but there will be an election. And when that election in November is over, there will be some settlement. There will some of the viciousness of this presidential election, the likes of which has not been experienced before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Somebody will be president. There will be a new Congress. There will be a new Senate. How do you see, and what do you say to the people now who say, I'm so fed up, I don't want any part of it? What do you say in particular to those who, through no fault of their own, Senator Lawless, are saying, well, it doesn't make a difference to us who wins or doesn't win. The damage is done. We are blacklisted forever and a day.
No, we have to have hope, Adrian. And my heart goes out to all of those who are there undocumented. It's heartbreaking. I see it here in Chicago. I see the funerals. Now we're Skyping our funerals, as you know.
Yes.
Which you do the same thing in New York and all over the country. It's a tough bet. We've had many disappointments over the last couple of years. But we've had some wins as well. And I just want to give you an example here in Illinois, where the reason I started 12, 14 years ago was with the young Irish that were out here, tradesmen at the time. And they were all eating in my pub one day, and the car park next door had about 15 their construction vans. I was talking to them all inside in the restaurant pub. And not one of them had a driver's license. And they asked me, would I represent them to see could they do anything about driver's licenses. Well, 12 years on, 2 years ago, we got the law passed in Illinois through bipartisan support, Republicans and Democrats. The Republicans delivered the votes. We got the law passed. And since then, Adrian, 250,000 in Illinois, of all races, of course, 250,000 have been tested and granted their licenses. And the proviso we put in was that the car they were driving would have to be insured. So it's a win-win for everybody. So they have temporary visitor driver's license, and they're using our model now in other states. So that's only one small aspect of immigration reform. But the relief for so many people that are now licensed to drive here. So that's the type of thing, and I would say to people, our Irish listening, please don't give up hope. We're fighting. We want you to keep at it as well, you know, to talk to your representatives and to your senators and your congressmen and women that this has to be passed. And only last March, I was speaking with Speaker Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, whom has huge Irish roots and is very proud of his roots. But he is a pro-immigration reform advocate. I was really disappointed with him that he didn't stand up to the far right wing and say, listen, I am in favor of immigration reform. He still would have been elected, Adrian, because there was no one else would take over the leadership, only himself. But he said, and I saw him speaking in a town hall meeting, I'm sure you saw it yourself there a couple of weeks back, where he says they're not going to deport 11 million people. That it has to be taken in stages. And it seems to me that they're all talking about 2017 as beginning to do piecemeal immigration reform.
And it will happen because I don't think that America can settle for more of the same. And during this period, though, and you've said it, and I agree with you, it has to be very disheartening for the undocumented in the United States. But I do want to ask you, though, do you feel that the scale, the story that we, in fact, might have one more rabbit in the hat, so to speak, and that we, as the Irish, might get a special dispensation, a special allotment, as in fact Australia has in some of the other countries.
Sure.
Is that dead in the water?
No, it's not. And I'll tell you, if you recall back 4 years ago when we got the Senate bill that passed with bipartisan support,
right,
we had 10,500 visas in perpetuity in that bill. And you know this, I was really surprised myself. When I went to the Hispanics, and especially Luis Gutierrez here in Chicago, I said, Luis, there's a special proviso for the Irish in the Senate bill. I said, I hope you'll support it. How many are you getting, he said. I said, 10,500. Oh, for God's sake, that's nothing, he said. And there was no objection whatsoever. So we had the likes of your own Senator Schumer there and Senator Durbin here in Chicago who were supporting us and will support us again. And I've always made the point that there's a special relationship, Adrian, between Ireland and the United States, and especially now with Brexit happening. Let there be no doubt, Brexit is in, it's going to happen. The British are pulling out of the European Union, which means Ireland will be of more importance now to American companies who will want to have their European headquarters in Ireland because we speak the language, they have a young, educated workforce, highly educated, and it's American friendly. And I don't see why there wouldn't be a special deal, especially for us. It wasn't objected to 4 years ago, and why should it be again? And there is good, I mean, we are highly regarded on the Hill, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the and we're building up support with Republicans. I do a lot of bipartisan stuff because I feel it's very important. We're not going to get this through, Adrian, without bipartisan support from the Republicans, irrespective, no matter what happens.
Absolutely. And, you know, whereas the month leading up to November, what we are subjected to is not going to get any better until after the election. That is for sure. But there will be a lot of things will have to be sorted out. But I could not agree with you more in that without both sides of the aisle, nothing is going to happen. End of story. That part has been in place, and that will stay in place unless there is a level of cooperation there.
Absolutely. And you know, Father Adrian, we have to set the groundwork now. Please don't give up, I'm saying to all of the Irish undocumented. Let's keep going. Let's keep working at it. We have to lay the groundwork. I mean, the rhetoric that's going on, I'm astounded with what is happening. But if you notice the last few days, how Trump is now flip-flopping, gone back 180 degrees one day on deporting the 11 million. It changes the next day, and I suppose whoever he's talking to, but he's been told, I've no doubt, by his advisors, he cannot win this election. He cannot win without the massive support of the Hispanic vote. And, you know, you're not going to get people voting for you when you're classed as murderers and rapists. You know, so there's a massive change in their campaign.
Yes,
but we have to lay the groundwork because it has to happen.
We have to lay the groundwork, but also just with respect to that, and we won't get into any deeper, you know, with the upcoming election. But a great number of Republicans are, in fact, fearful of their own position with respect to, again, the flip-flopping. Not that it's all on the Trump side, as we can see.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
There's an equal amount of ballyragging, you know, with Hillary Clinton. All of that, if we wait to see how this one is going to shake out, and if we wait then to see January, and then if we have to restart our engines sometime in 2017, that will be a lot of decades of hard work, which leaves the Irish, you know, when all hope was pretty much gone. The Irish emigrants did manage, and the Irish organizations did manage to keep the topic alive. I think perhaps one of the most significant objects of this conversation is to tell people, no, don't wait around and see how this is going to work out,
no.
Because you know, if we're going to make this a St. Patrick's Day or a St. Patrick's Month revival, that's going to be too late.
Absolutely. And you know what? I want to say to all of the Irish groups out there, I have worked closely with Eiler here in Staunton,
sure,
the Irish immigrant groups, the AOH, Dan Dennehy. The AOH have been very, very supportive. And one of the reasons I'm so happy with the AOH is that they represent a massive diaspora themselves, right?
Yes.
Throughout the country. And in fairness, they have backed our immigration stance 100%. And I was actually down at their convention down in Atlantic City a few weeks ago. And I must say I was highly impressed with the reaction. Well, there are some that are totally anti, of course, as we have in all, as we have in Irish communities. But we have to keep at this. And the Irish groups, and you have a lot of Irish groups, associations in New York there, they have been very, very, very helpful. But it's important that they keep at it right around the country. And I can tell you, we will leave no stone unturned. And the other thing that I wanted to say as well is that for the last 2 years that I've been involved with, the Irish government, every single time they're on the hill, on the Paddy's week, as they say, the first thing that comes up in the agenda with Republicans and Democrats is the Irish undocumented. And no stone has been left unturned and will not be left unturned, I can tell you that.
I want to talk about your own background. First of all, for somebody who decided on a trip to Chicago that this is where you would set up your business, your restaurants, and so forth, did you have any notion that as a blow-in, that in fact you could and you would be as successful as you have been. You started off with one restaurant. Now, God knows you had plenty of experience in your native Galway City, so you knew what you were doing. But what was it? What was the impetus there to say that in Chicago, again, a city that mostly we only hear negative stuff?
Oh, absolutely, that's for sure.
What gave you that bit of oomph that says, okay, regardless of the city and all the negative publicity that the city gets and the crime stats and everything, what made you think that you would be able to not only establish a restaurant but several very prominent upmarket restaurants? What was it about Chicago that said, what was that spark that went off when you visited Chicago?
Well, I think I came a bit blind, to be quite honest, at the first, Adrian. But would you believe it, when I went looking for premises, I didn't even know who the Cubs were. And I opened 50 yards of the premises for sale right beside the Cubs Park, 50 yards down from the park, right in the middle of it. And the advisor that I had said, you have to go here, he says. This is in the 1997,
right.
Late 97. Probably a bit blind, but great faith and great belief in myself. And my kids, they came with me, which was a huge move for them as well, I can tell you.
Yeah.
You know, coming at 19, 20 or 21 from Galway, where all their friends were. And really, from the start, it was successful. And then we had 10 great years there. So I've only moved downtown, like, in the last 8 years. But most of our places are down. We have 6 places open downtown now. And but my family are great. The 4 of them are in the business. Anna and myself are semi-retired from it, really, which gives me the time to be able to do what I'm doing.
Yes.
And they have brought it to another level. You know, my first place was the Irish Oak, an Irish theme pub. I transported in 2 containers the interior of it out from Belfast, started from there and built up huge contacts. And then Galway and Chicago, then of course, are sister cities.
And that was before you captured the Rose of Tralee this year.
Right.
There's an awful lot of luck. There's an awful lot of luck heading your way, I tell you that.
I'm telling you there is. And would you believe it? My wife Anne was one of the judges here in Chicago out in Gaelic Park.
Yes.
And she was one of the judges that choose Maggie McElDowney. And we were over the moon. And in fact, last night in Galway, Anne hosted. Anne is at home in Ireland at the moment.
Yes.
And the Pearns and the Rose were going to Galway anyway. And they had a big party in Galway last night for her. So we're just waiting for her to come back to Chicago because there'll be great excitement amongst the Irish community.
Yes.
And especially with our Galway, our sister city, of course. We're sister cities, Galway and Chicago. So we really jumped over.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You mentioned Gaelic Park in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Gaelic Park.
Well, it's probably one of the great centres outside Ireland. It's a magnificent location. Now, it's a bit far out of town. It's about 30 miles from the city centre of Chicago, down south. But they have a fantastic scene there with pitches, and they have a huge amount of ground as well, which helps. Weddings, they go on up there. I think that they're booked out for weekend weddings for 2 years. But they've been the hub out in the south side for the Irish, and of course host the games every couple of years.
Yes.
When it becomes Chicago's turn. Great people, all voluntary and voluntary built as well. I don't know how many years ago now before I came, but a magnificent place. And then you have the Irish Heritage Centre, which is on the north side here. Now, they have no pictures or anything. It's just an old school that they bought years ago. And a big Irish heritage movement up there as well. So we're covered on both sides.
Yes.
And, of course, all of the games taking place out in Gaelic Park, and rightly so.
Let me ask you about your own political endeavours when you lived in Galway. And what that was like.
Yeah, we were always... I was always a Fine Gael supporter. I was always a Fine Gael, my father. Although my father, funnily enough, might have been, Pat Lindsay, who was an next minister in the Irish government, Minister of Agriculture, and then after that he was a president of the High Court, was a constant visitor to our house. We were dairy farmers on the outskirts of Galway, Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember most of the campus of the university now where the playing pitches are. I milked cows there with my father many, many years ago. We used to deliver milk, no pasteurization that time, Adrian.
No.
Delivered milk, raw milk, to all of the main restaurants in Galway City. And funnily, with politics, my father never wanted to talk about politics. Never, ever, ever. And I often asked him, and I was the eldest son, so I stayed at home on the farm, by the way.
How many siblings did you have?
Four of us, yeah. My brother, one brother and two sisters. My brother actually was he just retired recently. He's actually world president of the World Trade and Tourism Organization. He was the guy that started the Jumeirah Beach and the Burj Al Arab Hotel in Dubai.
Mm-hmm.
So he's there over 25 years. But when I went into politics, I ran for local election in 1991, and my neighbor was Michael D. Higgins.
Yes.
Now, no need to notice who was the most successful in politics, I could tell you. Of course, he's a great president, Michael D. Higgins.
He definitely
but
is.
But I went to Fine Gael, and I was beaten actually by, I think, about 20 votes on the 14th count. You know, we have proportional representation, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this was all for, which is my colleague Angel Lupton, the late Angel Lupton, who got the seat, and I was just as well pleased, to be honest. She was the incumbent, and she was Fine Gael as well. So, but luckily I didn't win it, Adrian, because if I won it, I probably wouldn't be speaking to you today. I'd probably still stuck in Galway in politics or whatever. So that was my foray. That was my foray. And then I was chairman, actually, of the Galway West constituency for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of ended. I ran Jim Higgins' campaign for the European Union. Jim is a great friend of mine from Mayo.
Yes.
And Jim became MEP afterwards. But and that was my kind of, then when I came to the States, I haven't been a member since. In fact, the Taoiseach appointed me as an independent.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Senate, the Senate, I am in with the independent group,
mm-hmm.
as a group of eight of us, which probably gives me more. And I was really stunned actually the day that he called me.
Yes.
Because I thought in fact 5 years ago there was a lot of talk about the diaspora and we're having representation abroad. I thought they would have done it that time. Whoever they would have chosen, but I was really stunned this time, and I'll tell you why. Fine Gael lost 25 seats, and as you know, the Taoiseach, our Prime Minister, has 11 nominations to make under the Constitution,
right.
For the upper house, which is the Senate. Even though the Senate, all bills coming from the Dáil have to go through the Senate. Even though the Senate can't rescind a bill, but they can send it back with amendments.
Yes.
But we can actually initiate our own bill, so we can, in the Senate. But I really was stunned because so many Fine Gael people lost their seats, and normally he would have 11 nominations. He actually gave 3 to Fianna Fáil under the deal that they had, that they did for Fianna Fáil to support them in a minority government. But the reason in the Constitution that the Taoiseach would have 11 nominations was that the government would always have a majority in the Senate. But now, as you know, we don't have a majority government. We have a minority government. So I could be one of the shortest serving senators if the government falls. If the government falls, the Senate goes, you know.
Yeah.
So we just have to see what happens. But it's working well at the moment. You know, they're talking about three budgets. I don't know if it'll last that long.
Yeah.
But nobody wants an election because they say that even with the new election, the same result would probably come out, you know.
Yes, indeed. But I do want to ask you, though, because we are so busy with our own mishmash of an election coming up here that we sometimes forget that despite the great success of Ireland from its lowest point, and indeed because of the previous government and getting back on track, there seemed to be a sense of again hopelessness that the fracture in governing Ireland even became worse this time around, that it does show, you know, tremendous unrest with the Irish voters, the Irish citizenship. What do you read on that?
Well, you know, it's funny you asked me that question. It's the same throughout Europe, Adrian. The middle class, they're just disgusted with what's going on in government, a lot of them. They don't trust government anymore. And I think, you know, we see it here. We see what's happening in the middle class here in this country, in the United States. I think you have the same type of feeling in Ireland and throughout Europe. I mean, when you see Britain pulling out of the European Union, that's going to have huge implications, no matter what. We don't know what implications is going to happen to us. I think with, you know, we came out of Europe, okay, and in fairness to the last government, I thought they did an exceptional job.
Absolutely.
In that the IMF are gone out of the country, the European Union Bank has gone out of the country, they're paying their way, growth is the highest in Europe, but the people still don't feel it. They don't feel that they're making progress on the ground.
As in fact, Billy, Senator, you know, it's obvious that the same unrest, the same feeling obviously permeates throughout the United States.
It does. When you take
a look at again, the Republican primaries, it was simply that somebody was waiting, or most people were waiting to hear, how do we get away from the current situation? How do we get out of the mess that we are in? Why is everybody telling us that we're doing so well when, in fact, we know that we're not doing...
Yeah, we're not, and that the wage actually in real terms has gone down in the last 20 years. No, and it's the same, I can tell you, in Ireland. So right throughout Europe, you know, it's either left wing or right wing, and then you have this massive immigration, massive refugee situation from the Middle East coming into Europe as well, and that's having horrific impacts in some countries. I mean, some of the countries are really, really struggling. And the thing about immigrants, I say, and some of the Irish, we don't want them here.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, guys? They didn't want us in the United States either in the 1850s, and we were treated less than dirt when a lot of the Irish came out, and they're destitute from their own, you know, from Ireland, and they had to immigrate. And most people don't want to leave their own countries, Adrian. Why would you want to leave your own home? I mean, I left by choice, of course. But most people don't leave by choice, so they don't.
But let me ask you about, and you mentioned earlier, whether it's the St. Patrick's Day Bowl of Shamrock presentation, which is, you know, as old as St. Patrick itself.
Yeah.
You know, it's fine... And it's great that government, regardless of the tradition, is great. you come over. And that's it. But there is a little bit of anxiety and quid pro quo when we say, you know, we are doing one hell of a job in catering to immigrants in Ireland, and then when our Irish, you know, come to the United States to get the brush, there is a sense that, you know, that from once St. Patrick's Day is over, that's shelved again until this time next year. Now, that's the impression, but there is an ongoing, I mean, we have quite a number of friends in both the Friends of Ireland, we have on both sides of the aisle. Do you see in fact, they might have a new trump card because of Brexit, in terms of saying, listen, you know, we are going to be ahead regardless, whatever the outfall from Britain leaving the European Union. Isn't that something that, you know, can work for Ireland's, in Ireland's advantage, to Ireland's advantage and to the undocumented here?
It certainly does. And I have been speaking with many people here and at home on this issue. I said, look, but we should be looking for a special deal. We are going to be a very important island for the United States in the next couple of years with England leaving Europe. There is no doubt in my mind about that. And we should be looking now, hey, guys, we want our 18,000 visas back that we had before 1965, and we give quid pro quo. One, it's just very interesting statistic that a lot of people don't know about. American companies in Ireland employ about 140,000 Irish people.
Yes.
Irish companies in the United States employ about 110,000 to 120,000 people, nearly the same number, Adrian.
Absolutely. And so we lose track of that.
And I've been trying to use this all along. Shannon Airport has been used as a hub, and you know that it's controversial at times in Ireland. People are not happy about it, but that's been used for movement of troops for the last 20, 30 years.
Right.
We should be using that as a negotiating point as well.
You know, but I think. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, finish.
No, I just think that we should be using those points. To be get back our 18,000 visas that we had.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's another ticklish issue, and it does pertain to immigrants leaving Ireland. Leaving Ireland, not by choice, leaving because Ireland cannot support them.
Yep.
And that is that in addition to having to leave Ireland, they lose with that their vote. They lose with that their right to have any say whatsoever in the government of Ireland, because now out of sight, out of mind. I know that you've been very involved in that, and that a lot of people say, well, wait a minute now. Sure. Doesn't Ireland have enough trouble themselves without having the recent immigrants putting their 2 cents in?
No, I look, Adrian, 25 of the 28 European Union countries allow absentee voting for their citizens. Why are we any different? We have 150,000 Irish-born citizens here in the United States. We have a few million Irish citizens here, and they're all over the world. Of course we should have a vote, the Irish abroad, and I'm very, very strong on this, both Noreen Boyden and Kevin O'Sullivan and myself were the founders of VotingRights.ie. And by the way, the Taoiseach is 100% in favour of giving a vote to the Irish abroad.
And he has said so, yes.
Oh, and he wants it done quickly. He's asked. And what we have suggested, and I know people will say, well, hold on, maybe one party could manipulate the right. vote in the United States for a constituency. We're not talking about constituency or at all starting out. We're talking about the presidential election. And what we've proposed is that the presidential election, that it be opened up to all people north and south of Ireland, because this has to go to a referendum. It's a constitutional matter.
Right.
And then the president of Ireland is really ceremonial. You know, I mean, he doesn't make laws or whatever. So why not let's go with the presidential? Let's see how that works out, and let's see what if there are pitfalls. So be it. But yeah. It's not going to make a major shift. It's a different kettle of fish when it comes to constituencies and how would
absolutely.
You know, that's another debate. Let's take it step by step.
But let me play devil's advocate with you for a moment. And there are people who have left Ireland. They're bitter about having to leave. They, through no fault of their own, are pretty much stuck where they have emigrated to. They have now adapted anew, and they have adopted, and the country to where they moved to have adopted them. How do you set parameters as to who is entitled to vote, say for the president, next president, presidential election?
Sure. A very good point. I mean, some people have said to me, do you only allow it to Irish-born citizens? Well, then, constitutionally, can you do that? Are we then going to have a second-class status of Irish citizen?
Yeah.
If you weren't born in Ireland, these are things that will have to be worked out. I think what we will want to do is that we will take the best of all of the 25 other countries and how they vote and what the pitfalls they went through and what they see as the benefits or maybe non-benefits of allowing your citizens to vote. But do you know what really amazed me last year? Now, these are people that were able to come and go, okay, I was undocumented, can't travel back, as you know.
Right.
The number of people that came back to vote for the Marriage Equality Act, I was astounded by the number of young immigrants from Ireland that came back to vote in that election. And it was probably one of the surprises of the referendum. So people, you know, once Irish, Adrian, you're always Irish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think the interest is there. And look, of course there are people bitter that they couldn't work in their own country or stay in their own country. But they'll always, Ireland is still, they still call Ireland home, so they do.
Now, of course, the naysayers would say, well, let's just allow the people who've been who left for the last 2 years, or let's cut it off for 5 years, or something else like that.
Is
that going to be the major stumbling block?
I don't think so. I think it's going to be a very open debate. I do know that all of the parties are in favour of it. Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin, the major parties, and Labour. Although Labour have very few seats now, unfortunately. But they're all in favour of it. So, and you're quite right. There will be the naysayers saying, hold on, these guys, they shouldn't have any say in us. We were taxed to the hilt here for the last 5 years. And these guys now want, they left us in the lurch and they've flogged off or whatever.
Yes.
You know, you'll always have that, Adrian. But we are Irish no matter what happens. We're Irish. And we call Ireland home. And we're all interested in how Ireland is going to develop, and especially into the future. And I tell you, there are a lot of worries about the future in Europe at the moment with what's going on. So I would be very much in favor. And I'm looking forward to a very, very good debate on it. And hopefully we will get it through for the 2019 presidential election.
Right. And I think also that without debate, we'll still be talking about this 20 years from now. There has to be a debate. And
Adrian, us Irish, we never forget Adrian. To be sure, we'll be talking about it.
Well, you know, first of all, I'm delighted to have you, Senator Billy Lawless. And I also know that there are so many organizations, there are a slew of them, but, you know, ILIR, the Irish Lobby for Immigration Reform, with Kieran Staunton there, and, of course, the Ancient Owner of Hibernians and Dan Dennehy, are among the tremendous group of organizations that have, in fact, made the previous decades, that have kept the Irish tradition, that have kept the Irish story alive. And we've had a good number of wins along the way, despite, you know, and we are, I'm delighted, you know, particularly with the timing of this interview, to say that, you know, this will pass as well. And that organizations and individuals shouldn't give up and just say, to hell with it, you know.
Can I just say, please, to all of the organizations that you just mentioned there, all of them, I'm looking forward to working with them. I work with anybody that wants to better and get our Irish legalized. They have done tremendous work, all of them.
And all of the centers, the immigration centers throughout the United States.
Of course they have. They're just phenomenal. I mean, what they do in all the different cities and right down, you know, even in Cleveland and down the East Coast, over on the West Coast, in New York, they're here in Chicago. They're just phenomenal. And they really do look after our Irish. And one of the things that we're concerned about is the age of a lot of our Irish citizens here in Chicago. And I'm sure it's the same in other
cities. We've paid a lot of attention to that, on the East Coast here. I think perhaps getting buried in the overall publicity with respect to, you know, immigration reform, and how it seems that whatever, it's only getting worse by the day because of the presidential election coming up. I think we might indeed remember that the organizations that are interested in, in immigration reform in whatever manner that goes forward, that these organizations are taking care of the undocumented and those who have been here forever and a day. We still have that great mehel inheritance that we got from those who came before us, going back to the famine. So we're not in as bad a shape as we would like to be, but the one aspect that I think you agree with is that if we do nothing and wait, then the wait is going to be a long one.
Oh, Trillia, no, we have to be preparing now. We have to be out there lobbying now. On both sides. It's not just lobbying a Democrat or whatever. We got to get the Republicans have to be in on this. But I have noticed that they are beginning to turn. And I think they're just waiting for this election to be over one way or the other, Adrian. And we will see action next year. I would be very disappointed if we don't see action next year. We had an event here with IBEC. I found a member of the Illinois Business Immigration Coalition here only 2 weeks ago in Chicago with the Republicans. And John Rowe, who is former chairman of Exelon, is our chairman. We had Senator Kirk here, Republican. We had Ballard from Florida here, Republican. We had Bob Dold, who's in a very seat here, Republican. All in favor of immigration reform.
Okay.
You know, and we have turned about 90% of the congressmen and women in Chicago, in Illinois, Republicans, in favor of immigration reform. So they are the things that you can do in New York and you can do in Ohio And in San Francisco, you know, the same model, the same, get to your the bipartisan support.
We don't have to start.
And there are people out there, Adrian, like Republicans, like-minded like ourselves,
yes,
that do want to resolve this, yes.
Fortunately, the one thing that we do have going for us is that we don't have to start anything new. We've been to the forefront,
yeah,
and
yeah,
let's stay there. And from once this election is over, we will then not have to regroup. We will just have to move forward. I thank you.
No, I agree.
I thank you, Senator Billy Lawless, for your time and for your insight and for what you're doing, not only for Galway and Ireland, but also for the United States. And again, congratulations.
Well, thank you very much, Adrian. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much. And thank you for what you do for the Irish as well.
Thank you. And friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.